Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 93 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the Second Amendment podcast that has a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and with me, as always, is my uninfected co-host, Aaron Pollett. How are you doing, Aaron?
Yeah, thank you for clarifying that. I really do appreciate that. I am so over this beer virus and all the coverage and all the hysteria, and it looks like we're gonna talk about it again tonight. Yay! But let's try and keep that to a minimum. Let's just have the one beer.
I concur with you that I am over it, but also, I mean, one of the reasons why I'm over it is literally like it's my entire world is steeped in it. So how can I not talk about it? But at the same time, yeah, like, remember when you used to go on Facebook and you'd see funny stuff that didn't involve illness or toilet paper? Remember those days? Remember when people used to make fun of, like, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Donald Trump? Those are good times.
I have to admit that as a prepper, and not just one who's new to this, but someone who's been doing it for over 10 years at this point, there's a certain smugness of watching the little ant scurry. It's like, I'm not so crazy now, am I? No.
Yeah. I am not a prepper, but I am someone who is forward thinking, and I'm also a bargain hunter. So it's one of those things of the, if something is on sale or I have coupons and it's not perishable, I'm going to buy it and I'm going to stock up on it because this is stuff that we need. And why go to the grocery store and pay full price for toilet paper or paper towels or rice or beans or all that when I have bought them half price like a month ago and they're not going to go bad? And same thing ideas like there's a whole bunch of meat on sale. I'm just going to stuff it in my chest freezer because guess what? If you have a non-defrosting chest freezer, that's almost forever. I did actually find a ribeye steak that had been at the bottom of my freezer for a little bit too long and it was edible still. It just wasn't. Oh, well, yeah,
it's fine unless you lose power.
Yeah. Yep.
And it may not be an issue for you, but for us in Florida, where a hurricane can knock out power for weeks at a time, yeah, that is a concern. Yeah, we've had to throw out more food than we'd like. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, no, my father-in-law definitely has had those instances. Yeah, hurricane comes through, you come home and you take everything out of the freezer and put it in the trash.
Ouch. Yeah. Yep. Or you're just throwing away hundreds of dollars of food. Just, ow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the good news with hurricanes and all that is it's not like they catch you by surprise. So you can actually do the prepping in the other way of the, well, it's time for us to have these steaks because the power might go out and then we'll have to throw them away. And if the power doesn't go out, we just ate steaks. So who cares?
Pretty much. I'm glad you've been listening when I've been talking.
Yeah.
So everything is canceled, apparently. And honestly, this is not much of a change for me because in contrast to my normal bubbly outgoing self, when you see me at an event, for the most part, I'm pretty much a homebody. I stay in the house. I do my thing. Like once a week is like my chore day, and it's like that, and now I have to put on pants, and I have to go deal with people, and And so, really, this is not much of a change for me, but for someone like you who is very outgoing, and also because, well, you've got a little girl who's going to school now, I imagine that you've had your schedule upended. So yes, let's talk about everything canceled 2020.
So essentially we've got my house is an entirely different place. It used to be from about 9 o'clock in the morning till about, you know, 2:45. This house is empty except for me. So if I got work to do or I got to go someplace or all that, yeah, I've got the world is my oyster and I'm the ruler of it. Well, my wife got the call from her work that, yep, you're anybody who's not lab staff pack up all your stuff and head home, and we'll tell you when we want you back in the office. And she has been working at home now for on her second week. And yeah, my daughter's school just said, yep, we're all done. The great news, oh my God, the great news is that when my parents heard that, like literally I was on the phone with them, and when my phone chimed up and said, yep, no school tomorrow. And I went, oh, okay, you could come in tomorrow and pick up stuff if there's anything that you that your child left at school thinking they were going to be back on Friday. But yeah, we're not doing school anymore. And they just said, well, we'll take her. And I'm like, deal. So so my daughter is in Maine right now, and she's going to stay there for the week. And I mean, the cool thing about it is that like we didn't have is that I actually hated when I got sick at school. I think actually in high school, I was sick twice for the entirety of high school. And I hated it because, all right, cool, you're sick and on your back. And then usually like the day before and the day after a sick day, you're dragging your butt a little bit. And all the homework still comes in. And I don't know. I've since bumped into a bunch of people like, yeah, I didn't do any homework in school because evidently you could survive that way. I was unaware that that was an option. Like I was always, the homework always got done. And so suddenly it's one of those like, oh great, I was sick for a day and now I've got twice the work the following day. This is no fun. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My daughter, she could just like go online and just like, right now she's kindergarten, so she's like playing like math games and word games and reading games and stuff on these little educational portals. But like my next door neighbors, their daughter's 15, I think, and she's just, when we had like snow days, it was one of those like, yeah, no, she's upstairs doing her homework and doing reading assignments and things like that. And yeah, they're not going to count this against the school system. I should speak for the Floridian and anybody who's in the South, but when you have a nasty snowstorm and the roads are impassable, they just call off school. And then at the end of the school year, they just add an extra day to make it up. There's whatever, I think it's like 180 days is the magic number. And if come the end of the scheduled school year that you haven't made up your prerequisite 180 days, well, we just keep going. And interestingly enough, actually, in New England, they usually tack on like 5 extra days at the end of the school year. So when you look at the school calendar, the last day of school is listed at such and such a day. And if you have a mild winter like we've had this year, they actually will move the last day of school back instead of forward, because yeah, oh, we didn't have as many school days as we had banked on.
Believe it or not, I actually know how snow days work.
Where'd you learn that from?
Well, I didn't always live in Florida.
Yeah, but how did you not die in a place that got snow?
Well, I was younger, so that helps.
Fair enough.
But yeah, in middle school, I was in Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah, that's a place that gets snow.
Yes, yes, it does. And, you know, we actually have they aren't literally snow days, but we've got something like that baked into our schedule here, or at least we account for it. So, you know, if there's a hurricane that comes in, mm-hmm. I mean, most of hurricane season is during the summer, but, you know, we've got school starting in August, and so August, September, October, November, I believe, is the last month of hurricane season. So it's possible that school could be delayed due to storms. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it does happen, not as often as snow days up north. But yeah, we aren't total barbarians. We know how this works.
Yeah. And also, you sometimes also had the late hurricanes. I was just thinking about the fact that, yeah, I remember, I think it hit Maine on the weekend, because I don't think we missed school for it. But I remember in elementary school, them talking about Hurricane Gloria and that there was going to be a hurricane coming through and it was going to be a big deal, and being very, very excited about the high winds and the power going out when that happened. So, yeah. Maine got hit with a hurricane. It knocked down a couple trees. It really wasn't that bad. I mean, New England hurricanes really aren't that big a deal. It's just a bad storm. Oh yeah,
but really? It's just bad. It's not wicked.
Wicked bad. It wasn't wicked bad. No, it's just a bad.
Wicked bomb cyclone.
Wicked bad's a nor'easter. So yeah, overall, yeah, we're prepared for being locked up and the limitations of things, and everything like being canceled and they shut down the restaurants. That's understandable, but it's a bummer. Just a bummer. But like the thing that I'm bummed about is like all these like panic buyers, because it's one of those things of the, all right, look, I'm prepared. I don't ever set myself up so that like I need anything. I go to the grocery store and get stuff that I will be needing. But now suddenly all these people are panic buying and shelves are empty. Now it's just making me nervous about just the, okay, I've got a solid month's supply of toilet paper built up. But what happens if by the end of the month, when we're running out of toilet paper, now we go into the store and we want to just pick up a couple of packs just to keep us going. Then what? But I have a toilet paper solution. I came up with one.
Ooh.
Yes, I'm actually kind of excited about this. So I don't throw anything made out of cloth away. It started when I became a gun nut, because it's one of those. I bought my first gun cleaning kit, and it came with those little cotton pads that you use to swab out the bore of your gun. And I went, I mean, this is made of cotton. And look, I've got a T-shirt that's got like stains and stuff, and my wife's making me throw it away because it's too shabby. Well, you know what? Why throw it away when I can just cut it into shapes of the little patches that I need? And then also on the top of that, ever so often cut yourself like a rag if you want to like clean up something that's nasty, but you need something that's a little more resilient than a paper towel. And then, but at the same time, when it's done, you just want to throw it away. You don't want to use like a good like kitchen towel or something to clean that up. So yeah, I've got a whole bunch of T-shirts, and I even got like an old bed sheet. We bought like a super duper high thread count bed sheet, and anyone who's bought a super high thread count bed sheet knows that super soft, super comfortable, also rips just looking at it. And so it developed a big rip right down the middle of it, and I said, "Well, don't throw that away. I'm going to keep it." And I've never actually used it, and that was like probably like a decade ago that we had this bed sheet, and I've just been lugging this bed sheet around with a rip in the middle of it ever since. And if we run out of toilet paper, that bed sheet comes out of the bag where it sits in the corner of my armory. It goes into the washing machine. It gets a nice wash on hot, and then it's going to get cut into essentially 4-sheet toilet paper type allotments. And my game plan is that for everyone doing a number two operation, not to be gross, you will select from a bag, the bag, and use it to the best of your ability to clean up as much as you can with that one sheet. Toss it in the trash, because I just do not want to deal with that ever again. And then you could just hop in the shower and hose off the rest. For the female-bodied members that might be in there, you will also select a single sheet when you are done. You will blot everything dry, and then there will be a receptacle for you to throw that in. And once a bunch of them have accumulated, I'll wash them with the laundry, because urine's not that disgusting. It's a pretty easy thing to deal with, and the worst thing about it is that it turns into ammonia. Ammonia is insanely water-soluble. The washing machine makes it all go away. And then we can reuse those until they all get soiled with number two. And then if by the time, with the amount of cloth that I have down here, if we completely run out of that stuff, by that point in time, you know what? We're just going full Mad Max. So I'm probably going to be using human skin for wiping my rear end. And I'm going to be wearing a leather hockey mask, and I'm going to be riding around in a dune buggy.
And, of course, a spiked cod piece.
Oh, yes. Gotta have that. Which, you know what? Why don't we just go there right now? Because, you know what? That does seem like a lot of fun. Why didn't people immediately see Mad Max and go, you know what? We can keep the infrastructure in society, But let's go with the hockey masks and the leather banana hammocks.
So speaking of spiked cod pieces, have you heard what was going on in Florida over the weekend with the former gubernatorial candidate?
So I absolutely heard this. And how do you want to divvy up this delicious piece of red meat?
Dude. Well, I need to apologize to our listeners. Despite the hilarious segue, there are unfortunately no spiked cod pieces in this story that we know of.
That we know of. I'm about to say, Aaron, how can you be so sure?
Yeah, because one of the people involved in this is a gay male escort who frequently takes revealing photos of himself on a website called rent.men, I believe. Mm. Oh, I like that. Mm.
Well, I mean, I believe that is the website frequented by anti-gay firebrand preachers.
I'm going to set it up and then you can dive into it because I know how much you love politics. So a couple of years back, there was a hotly contested governor's race here in Florida. And the winner, Ron DeSantis, Republican, won by like less than 0.5% of the votes. It was very, very close. The other candidate is a man by the name of Andrew Gillum, who is a Democrat, liberal, progressive, black, anti-gun, and just, it was a very stereotypical, you know, he's a typical Democrat, and Ron DeSantis is a typical white conservative man. So, you know, we're just setting the scene here. And Andrew Gillum was, oh gosh, I think he was former former mayor of Tallahassee.
Yep.
Yes. And so he lost in a very tight election, and he apparently, because I didn't know this because I don't watch CNN, but apparently was on CNN a lot doing a lot of commentary and making himself more of a household name across the country. And then he went full Florida man.
Yes, he did. Allegedly, I mean, not allegedly, he was scheduled to officiate at a wedding at a very swanky hotel in Miami Beach.
In South Beach.
Okay, in South Beach.
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, there are large beach chunks of Miami.
Yes.
And so South Beach is one of the swankier parts of that beach.
Mm-hmm. So he was extra swanky.
Yes.
And
he was at a 4-star hotel, too.
Mm-hmm. And so he was going to officiate at a wedding, which is kind of a big deal as someone who is married and planned a wedding. And it's a pain in the ass. And there's a lot going on. And actually, unfortunately, with all these like cancellations and restrictions on people, I've been hearing lots of stories of people who have weddings planned for like the next week or so. And it's just one of those like, oh, God. And like everything from, oh, God, I'm going to have to call off my wedding, to Bridezilla, we're still having my wedding, virus or not. Okay, Bridezilla. You sure that's a wise idea? What happens if you have a wedding and no one shows up?
I'm actually thinking that, like, come December 31st, we should just get a do-over. It'll be 2020 again.
2020 part two. We're going to take a mulligan on this one.
Well, yeah, because apparently, you know, we're going to lose, like, months of our lives. Mm-hmm. But yeah, go on.
But yeah, but so speaking of no-shows, Andrew Gillum was a no-show for the wedding.
Yeah, the guy who was, like, you know, pronouncing husband and wife didn't show up.
Yeah, the actual officiant, the guy who can actually make a wedding rather than just two people making out together.
And the scoop is where he was. And the only reason we found out about it was because there was a 911 call placed regarding someone in a hotel ODing.
Mm-hmm.
And the police arrived, and Are you itching to take this? I think I hear you really wanting to take this.
Yeah, so.
Okay, go
we
ahead.
Don't, we don't know what he was doing in the meantime of not showing up for this wedding, but pretty much when whatever he was doing came to a close, it involved police and a medical team coming into the hotel room. The gay male escort was suffering from cardiac arrest in the room, presumably from an overdose of methamphetamines.
Yeah, because they found bags, plural, mm-hmm. of crystal meth in the bathroom.
Yep. And then Andrew Gillum was in the bathroom throwing up into the toilet. And when asked questions about what was going on, he was really unable to respond. He was completely incoherent. Amazingly enough, all of this left with no arrests, no charges being filed on anybody, which, yeah, I don't know if you or I could do such a Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas moment and get away with it.
Well, we do want to point out that even though Andrew Gillum was in the presence of a gay prostitute, current evidence suggests that he did not call said person. There was a third person in the room who was like doing chest compressions on the ODing man. Mm-hmm. And apparently he is the one who not only called the prostitute, but like loaned him his credit card so he could get the hotel room.
Yeah. And according to the words of the prostitute, he and Gillum, and again, read this how you will, have been longtime friends for several years. Are they friends socially or are they friends professionally? I don't know. You read it how you will, but yeah, now Andrew Gillum has made a public statement that he is entering into rehab for alcohol abuse. And you know what? I'm not going to shame him or tease him for that, because I mean, it's, there are people suffering from alcoholism in my family. It's a horrible disease, and I hope that he kicks this horrible habit and gets his feet back underneath him. But the big thing that just I got was just the, I mean, you've got like, there was the mayor of Toronto.
I believe it was him, the one who was found high on crack.
Yes. Yeah, and I mean, when you have these like politicians that are just such a hot mess, and I mean, so it's one of those. It's the mayor of Toronto. Toronto is a gigantic city, and nothing to sneeze at. Same thing with like Washington D.C. with Marion Barry, but it's still a mayoral race. I mean, this guy was in a hotly contested gubernatorial race for one of the biggest states in the union. I mean, Florida's no damn joke.
Mm-hmm.
How is the question I have is the, how do you get somebody who's that much of a hot mess? I mean, it seems like DeSantis is doing a decent job. It's not like he's some sort of like Donald Trump candidate that's like highly contested and controversial. Like how does was he just keeping it under wraps so well?
Maybe. I don't know. I have to admit, I don't follow politics the way you did, and so I really only heard about Gillum when he announced his candidacy, and I was like, who? So, there's that. Really, what I take away from all this is just a sense of wonder that, okay, there are three people in a hotel room when the police show up. There is evidence of drug use. There is very obvious evidence of drug use because one of the people is ODing and the other one is intoxicated on something, and no arrests were made. And I might have missed something, but it wasn't just Gillum wasn't arrested. I didn't find anything about how the other two weren't arrested either.
Yeah. I mean, that was the big thing. So I will say this did bring up to mind actually on my it was my 22nd birthday. So my first birthday where I was legally able to buy alcohol for my own party. It was me, Nate Spencer, who does the music for the show, his girlfriend was actually born. My birthday's January 1st. Her birthday was December 31st. And we all, like, me, him, my wife, we all met about the same time. So we all were longtime friends. And I just said, geez, your birthday's the day before mine. Let's get a hotel room and just pack a whole bunch of people in it. Get away. We're all college students. So we're all, you know, living, we're all still living at home. And so just pack all these people into a hotel room away from the prying eyes of our parents and have ourselves a good old bit of debauchery. And one of my friends was a couple of my friends were pretty serious stoners. And of course they brought some marijuana. And of course this is decades ago. So this was back when it was not even remotely legal. And I said to him, I said, totally cool that you have that, but why don't you like go off to, there's a pretty secluded parking lot. Why don't you go off into the parking lot and smoke up there? Because I don't do weed and it's my hotel room. It's under my name. And I don't want to deal with any problems if we get caught with that. And of course, it being December 31st, heading into January 1st in Maine, they elected not to do that. And you know what? I didn't care. It was all good. We didn't get into trouble. Let me tell you, there was not the only joint being sparked up in that hotel that day. Let me just say you could hang weed flavored bacon in the hallways of that hotel that evening. And but yeah, so I totally see how that was. But again, I told him, I'm like, don't do it in the room because it's under my name. If the cops show up, there's marijuana in this place. Like maybe they'll look harsh on you because you're the one smoking it and you're the one that's high and I'm not. I'm just drunk out of my mind, but it's still my hotel room. So just I'm again very, very surprised. Like there is the privileged class in here. That's the one thing that I can think of my mind is that there are the little people and then there are the upper echelon that party with Andrew Gillum. So yeah, I just was surprised at number one, what a hot mess this story is. I mean, the fact that it wasn't even just he was out partying. No, he was there to officiate a wedding. Like he screwed somebody over hardcore, and rather than being at a wedding, he's puking in a toilet while a gay escort that he may or may not be engaged in. I guess it does sound like I have seen all the reports are not saying that Gillum was had hired the escort and were using him as an escort. He was an escort. He might have been on his own time. I don't know. But that was just another factor is the, you know, was Andrew Gillum a closet case that was secretly hiring escorts on the side, you know, much like aforementioned firebrand anti-gay pastors that we frequently hear about. But yeah, Florida man. Florida man.
Does whatever a Florida can. What's he do? It's not important in the eyes of the law. Florida man.
Brilliant, Darren. Brilliant. We've got a hit. So everything's been disrupted because of all of the things. So yeah, we don't actually have any other segments. Actually, it's interesting because my daughter was carted away by my parents. Again, thank you, Mom and Dad. I know you don't listen to the podcast, but I don't care. I'm thanking you on the air anyway. I had myself more free time than usual. And but Oddball and David both said, oh, maybe we could get something, and then all this went through and we did not have any segments other than this. So I decided to cut together a mega fisk.
And when he says mega fisk, he really does mean it. This thing is gonna be the majority of the show. It's like 19 minutes. So you know, on the one hand, it's really quite a lot to listen to. On the other hand, Weird is acceding to some of my demands, and it's like we aren't just revisiting it in 2 and 3 and 4 chunks. We're getting it all done. So, you probably have heard, unless you live under a rock, about the altercation. No, that sounds a little too violent. Yes, here we go. A spirited interaction that presidential candidate Joe Biden had with an auto worker the other day. And Joe Biden's very fine command of the English language, in which he engaged in debate with this fellow. And Weird just takes it apart and does it with his usual style of, we're going to separate every little piece and we're going to beat it into the ground in the sake of thoroughness.
So you've all seen it by now. If not, go over to the show notes and check it out. Joe Biden was campaigning at a Fiat Chrysler plant in Detroit, and a UAW worker by the name of Jerry Wayne got a chance to ask this question.
These union workers that have been working countless hours under the Trump administration, I'd like you to explain how you plan to not only keep us working, but how you intend on getting the union vote when there is a large portion of the union workers that are gun enthusiasts, and you are actively trying to diminish our Second Amendment right and take away our guns.
It was a prepared question that he read off his phone. Good move, Mr. Wayne. It was concise and to the point. The former vice president responded.
You're for
sugar.
Also concise. What more could I add? Those are your pro-gun talking points and the one rebuttal to rule them all. Okay, I kid. But really, I shouldn't. There was more to that response.
You're full of s***.
All right, thank you.
Now, shush.
Yikes. When that female aide heard it was a gun guy asking a well-thought-out question, she went into full protection mode to save the vice president from certain doom. Only to be shushed, which is entirely disrespectful, especially from a man who just cussed out a potential voter. I doubt there's much potential anymore. If Mr. Wayne had any thought of voting for Joe Biden, those hopes are gone forever now. Of course, we can hear why she tried to pull him away.
I support the Second Amendment. Second Amendment, just like right now, if you yell fire, that's not free speech.
Bad faith argument. Yelling fire in a crowded theater is free speech. But you can be punished for it if there's no fire, and the resulting panic you cause results in injury or death, or can be assumed could cause injury or death. If you want to know the Second Amendment equivalent of yelling fire, it's murdering, assaulting, or threatening somebody with a gun. When somebody murders or threatens somebody, the fact that they own or have that gun isn't questioned. Just the actions they took with that gun are questioned. And if you shoot somebody with an Olympic 22 target pistol or a double-barreled shotgun or an AR-15 or a full-auto M16, it doesn't make a difference in the eyes of the court. Biden digs further.
I have a shotgun, I have a 20-gauge, a 12-gauge, my son's hunt.
Okay, first up, who cares? You own a shotgun, and now we know you're somehow part of the club? You hunt, so now we can trust you? This is crap, and if somebody owns or doesn't own a gun is irrelevant if they support the Second Amendment or not. Further, the Second Amendment has nothing to do with hunting, so the fact that Biden or his sons hunt has no relevance to this issue. Also, can I mention how strange the "my sons hunt" statement is? First up, his eldest son, Beau, passed away from cancer back in 2015. So it's not like he's going to be an advisor on policy. And his other son, Hunter, as far as I know, is still struggling with substance abuse, including, but not exclusive to, alcohol and cocaine. I did a little research, and honestly, I wasn't able to find any cut and dry answers. But question 11E of the 4473 form we all know and love reads, are you an unlawful user of or addicted to marijuana or any depressant, stimulant, narcotic drug, or any other controlled substance? Warning, the use or possession of marijuana remains unlawful under federal law, regardless of whether it has been legalized or decriminalized for medical or recreational purposes in the state where you reside. So clearly, Hunter Biden can't pass a NICS background check, even though he's never been convicted of a drug crime. I'm not sure if it would be legal for someone to privately sell or lend him a firearm. I will say I had a coworker who was involved in a divorce, and during that time he decided to take me up on my perennial invitation to the gun range. Except his wife had filed a restraining order as part of the divorce. I always changed the subject because I was terrified that even lending him a firearm on the range could be a felony.
You're not allowed to own any weapon.
Not really sure what he means. Does he mean he's not able to own any weapons? Because that isn't true. Or is he saying he's not able to own just any weapon, as in some aren't allowed? Dunno, but we'll get to that in a bit.
I'm not taking your gun away, at all.
If you've been following the news, I think you know where I'm going with this one. Let's finish up with Vice President Biden's response first.
You need 100 rounds?
Bad faith argument. I hate when anti-gunners talk about 100-round magazines, because none of them are calling for banning 100-round magazines. They're calling for banning 11, sometimes 6-round magazines. They never ask, do you need 11 rounds? Because the answer to that is, yeah, sometimes you do. And all these gun grabbers exempt the police because those guys wouldn't tolerate their duty weapons only holding some arbitrary number of rounds. And the reason for wanting large capacity would be the same reason we want it.
They know when you said you're going to take our guns.
I did not say that. That's not true. I did not say that.
It's a viral video.
It's a viral video like the other ones they're putting out that are simply a lie.
Your voice, you said that you're taking the...
Gaslighting bullshit.
Fiddlesticks.
You all know I have that audio queued up. But he's not done, so you'll have to wait for it.
Take your AR-14s.
Okay, this is not okay.
Hold on.
All right. Okay, saying AR-14 is dumb. But Biden says the guy is lying that he won't take anybody's guns away. But semi-auto rifles are the most common guns in America. So yeah. Yeah, you are.
Hey, let's go. There's a lot of guys wanting.
The audio is a little tough to hear, but he's asking if the guy wanted to go outside. We all know what that means. That's a criminal threat. Maybe we should do one of those red flag laws that Joe champions and get his shotguns taken away.
There's the deal. Are you able to own a machine gun?
Machine guns are illegal. That's right. AR-15's illegal. How is that a machine gun? No, it's not. Do you need 100 rounds?
So we covered the 100-rounds crap. Let's unfold this machine gun nonsense. Can you own a machine gun? Yep, they're legal in most states, including Michigan. But I can understand the confusion, as 20 grand for a transferable M16 plus taxes, paperwork, registration, and long wait times really does make it de facto illegal, especially when you see how easy it is just to walk into a gun store and buy an AR-15. Still, Joe doesn't correct him, and he seems to be asking a leading question. Like, Joe thinks machine guns are illegal. So does Joe mean he wants semi-auto rifles to be NFA items? Or does he mean, like, completely illegal? I have to guess. But my guesses are going to be supported by evidence taken directly from Joe Biden.
I want to make something clear. I'm going to guarantee you this is not last year's scene of this guy. You're going to take care of the gun problem with me. You're going to be the one that leads this effort. I'm counting on you. We need you badly. The state needs you. The country needs you. You're the best.
He's talking about Robert Francis Beto O'Rourke. And many are saying that O'Rourke will be some sort of gun czar in the Biden administration. And this wasn't the only video of Biden and O'Rourke talking about guns.
And by the way, this guy can change the face of what we're dealing with. In regard to guns, assault weapons, in regard to dealing with climate change. And I just want to warn Amy, if I win, I'm coming for it.
Gee, two videos with similar messages. All with the man who said this.
Congressman O'Rourke, because I know this is personal to you. El Paso is your hometown. Some on this stage have suggested a voluntary buyback for guns in this country. You've gone further. You said, quote, Americans who own AR-15s and AK-47s will have to sell them to the government, all of them. You know the critics call this confiscation. Are you proposing taking away their guns, and how would this work?
I am. If it's a weapon that was designed to kill people on a battlefield, if the high impact, high velocity round, when it hits your body, shreds everything inside of your body because it was designed to do that so that you would bleed to death on a battlefield and not be able to get up and kill one of our soldiers. When we see that being used against children And in Odessa, I met the mother of a 15-year-old girl who was shot by an AR-15. Mm-hmm. And that mother watched her bleed to death over the course of an hour because so many other people were shot by that AR-15 in Odessa and Midland. There weren't enough ambulances to get to them in time. Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. We're not going to allow it to be used against our fellow Americans anymore.
It was never exactly stated which viral videos Mr. Wayne was citing, but boy, those are two big ones. But this is not out of character for Joe Biden. This is from a CNN interview in August of 2019.
Does anybody think it made any sense that someone's able to walk into a gun store, buy an assault weapon that has multiple rounds, or buy an assault weapon that has 100 rounds, even though it may not, you can't point to the fact that it in fact had stopped it before? Do you want more of them on the street? Do we want to do that?
Again, the 100-round bit is nonsense, as they are generally talking about limits of 10 rounds, even less. So if we're arguing in good faith, do you think it's reasonable to be able to walk into a gun store and buy a semi-auto rifle that holds more than 10 rounds? Yes. Yes, I do.
So to gun owners out there who say, well, a Biden administration means they're going to come for my guns.
Bingo. You're right if you have an assault weapon. The fact of the matter is they should be illegal, period. Look, the Second Amendment doesn't say you can't restrict the kinds of weapons people can own. You can't buy a bazooka. You can't have a flamethrower.
So yeah, when Biden said,
I'm not taking your gun away at all.
They know when you said you're going to take our guns.
I did not say that. That's not true. I did not say that.
It's a viral video.
It's a viral video like the other ones they're putting out that are simply a lie.
Your voice, you said that you're taking.
Surprise, surprise. He was lying. Or he was so non-compos mentis he didn't remember that he'd said it. And again, these are the most popular firearms in the country. So saying you support the Second Amendment or you aren't coming for the guns, but you'll come after the AR-15 and related rifles, you really are, because those are the guns Americans choose to own. Also, like the machine guns are illegal crap, he's also wrong here. I know people who own bazookas. They're just NFA items like machine guns or short-barreled rifles. But flamethrowers aren't even considered firearms under the ATF laws. Kind of ironic, as can you think of an arm that's more fire than a flamethrower? So you can buy various flamethrowers, both surplus and modern, without even needing a background check.
The guys who make these arguments are the people who say the tree of liberty is watered with the blood of patriots.
It's the blood of tyrants. And you're sounding pretty tyrannical to me.
We need the protection against the government. We need an F-15 for that. You need something well beyond whether or not you're going to have an assault weapon.
Well, first, an F-15 fighter jet is not an arm the average citizen can own, and one of the weapons a tyrannical government will have exclusive control over. All that being said, President Trump arranged a troop withdrawal with the Taliban to get our troops out of Afghanistan. Not the Afghan government, but the actual insurgent force we were directly fighting, and still clearly has major control over that country. The coalition forces have F-15s, they have A-10s, they have AC-130s. Hell, we got nuclear damn bombs. We didn't use any of them, but we got them. And in the end, we elected to leave the Taliban alone in their country. I don't have any love or sympathy for the Taliban. But where else do you hear the battle cry of, just leave us alone?
I would institute a national buyback program, and I would move in the direction of making sure that that, in fact, was what we tried to do, get them off the street.
But that's not confiscating people.
No, that's not walking into their homes, knocking on their doors, going through their gun cabinets, etc.
So people would be allowed to keep the weapons they already have.
Right now, there's no legal way that I'm aware of that you could deny them the right if they had legally purchased them. But we can, in fact, make a major effort to get them off the street and out of the possession of people.
Operative phrase is, right now there is no legal way. That's not the former vice president saying he won't take our guns away or he doesn't want to. Just the opposite. If you want to get the guns off the street, as in out of the hands of violent street gangs and urban centers, you just send in the cops. You solve murders, catch bad guys doing crime, and what guns turn up in these investigations are de facto illegally held. So if they're handguns, shotguns, rifles, whatever, if you find them in the possession of a felon or being used in the commission of a felony, the law says you can seize those guns as well as lock up the criminals. When you're talking buybacks and bans, you aren't talking about getting guns out of the hands of violent criminals. You're talking about getting guns out of the hands of lawful citizens, since criminals don't care about the laws, as any gun is illegal for them to have. And all the bad things they're doing is even more illegal. So when you're targeting the lawful citizens and trying to strip them of their guns, why would somebody be fine with massive stockpiles of those guns being in private hands from back before your sweeping gun control laws? So yeah.
I'm not taking your gun away at all.
No, when you said you're going to take our guns,
I did not say that. That's not true. I did not say that.
It's a viral video.
It's a viral video like the other ones are putting out that are simply a lie.
It was your voice. You said that you're taking...
All lies. But it goes even further than that. Now This News did a puff piece on Biden, also in August of 2019. But this one was a retrospective of his anti-gun career.
I think we have to, in fact, have universal background checks, eliminate assault weapons as being illegal to be sold or owned in the United States, as well as limiting the number of bullets that can be in a clip to 10.
Note that universal background checks means transfer of firearms only through FFLs, meaning every transfer of a firearm has a make, model, serial number, former owner, current owner, and their personal information. Couple that with the talk of banning sale and ownership of these guns, that is a registry for mass confiscation. Might I add, the exact registry that the New Zealand government wants for rounding up not just the guns, but all those Kiwis who dared take their own personal protection into their own hands.
Was the assault weapons ban effective?
It was effective in the sense that there were fewer mass shootings that occurred, so I think it reduced anxiety considerably.
Wrong! Mass shootings really weren't a thing until Columbine, which happened in 1999. And it wasn't even a mass shooting, it was a failed bomb attack. I would argue that the media focusing on the guns, as well as giving the bad information about the killers being bullied underdogs, was what led to all the copycat spree killers. Many of the spree killers that made the national news at least reference Columbine as an inspiration. Hence why I'm not mentioning their names. And I don't mention the names of killers in any of my public statements. Furthermore, the federal assault weapons ban did nothing for lowering crime, hence why Biden pivots to mass shootings when given that question. As in, he knows it won't reduce crime. But I've just been playing years worth of clips of him talking about banning guns anyway. If he's not taking guns away to make us safer, why is he taking away the guns?
We have the capacity right now to make sure that no gun can be fired unless it has your biometric print on it. Now, if that technology exists for that reason, why in God's name can't every single solitary weapon being sold in America? Why is it such that we can't require, without violating anyone's Second Amendment right, that every single weapon sold can only be, the trigger can only be pulled by the person who has the biometric marker to pull it? Imagine how many lives we'd save.
Wrong, wrong, wrong. We don't have this technology. We have some locking devices that are essentially the standard integral key lock that several gun makers have been integrating into their guns for decades now, but now with a complication of batteries. And we have a bunch of unwieldy and buggy prototypes being shown as the next new thing. Never mind that almost none of my guns have been fired only by me. Hell, I haven't even had my SIG P365 for very long. And I bought it new from the factory, still in the shrink wrap. And the chamber was dirty. See, they test fire them. So any biometric must be able to be disabled or have a back door so that factory workers can test fire and inspect the firearm. Further, what if one of you wanted to shoot my little pocket gun? Why wouldn't I be able to do that? What if my wife wants to borrow it? What if my gun is a home defense gun? See, it sounds like a cool idea, but even when you look at these prototypes, they're almost always being made by tech geeks who have a passing interest in guns. Mostly because gun people just say, get a nice gun safe, lock it up when you're not using it, and have it in a good holster when you are using it. Still, the devil is in the details. Notice he kind of hints around requiring all guns having biometric locks. Again, they don't exist, so maybe they aren't even possible. But also, who's to say that all the guns currently in America can be retrofitted? Further, a ton of my guns are old and the bulk of their value is historical. The gun loses value if I remove the factory finish or replace the grips. What do you think the value would be for a Singer 1911 if it had a biometric reader stuffed inside of it? So yeah, when Biden says,
I'm not taking your gun away. At all.
They know when you said you're going to take our guns.
I did not say that. That's not true. I did not say that.
It's a viral video.
It's a viral video like the other ones are putting out that are simply a lie.
Your voice, you said that you're taking
the answer is
So to gun owners out there who say, well, a Biden administration means they're going to come for my guns.
Bingo. You're right if you have an assault weapon. The fact of the matter is they should be illegal, period.
Those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them.
You know, weird, that Fisk was so thorough. I was actually a bit disappointed that you didn't mention dog-faced pony soldier.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't. I decided I wanted to just, like, honestly speaking, this started off as, I mean, as you know, I played the majority of the altercation in the very beginning. Like, this started off as, oh, this will be, like, maybe an 8-minute audio Fisk. Like, I'll just play the bulk of the interaction between the two of them, and that'll be it. And then I realized, yeah, but I kind of want to go back to that CNN interview where he says, yeah, if you got an AR-15, we're coming for it. And I also wanted to play the whole, like, him endorsing Beto O'Rourke and that kind of, like, is he going to be a gun czar? Is that Biden's plan? But he's got plans for Beto O'Rourke in his campaign. I want to put that in there. And then I found that Now This News where, and I didn't even use all of that, like, go in the show notes. There's more. On, like, I mean, it went all the way back to, like, Biden's early days as a senator. He was anti-gun even then. And so it suddenly went to, oh my God, this is going to be huge. And then suddenly it was one of those, David said, I'm sorry, I thought I could do it, but I'm not going to get it in time. And Oddball went, oh God, work's blowing up. It's awful. And I said, step back, kids. I got this.
Yeah, I'm hearing reports that as a result of the beer, that, you know, now that stores have been bought out of Clorox and toilet paper and things like that, now there's a run on gun stores for guns and ammo, and I'm hearing in some places body armor, mm-hmm. which is, okay, I have no problem with people buying this. I am slightly concerned when people panic by these things, because it's like, okay, what kind of mindset are you in? And so I'm kind of worried about what the media is doing, and but that's beside the point. So I'm explaining one reason why David is so busy, because he works in a gun store and everything is crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, at this point, getting back on topic here, I really feel bad for my pro-gun liberal friends, because neither one of the candidates are pro-gun. I mean, Biden is obviously anti-gun, and Bernie, okay, despite coming from a pro-gun state, if you look at his webpage, you know, he's talking about, well, he doesn't really come out and say for gun control, but, you know, the key points, well, ending the gun show loophole, ban the sale and distribution of assault weapons, prohibit high-capacity ammunition magazines, implement a buyback program. So he really is buying into this as well. And I feel really bad for my liberal friends who are going, well, who do I vote for?
I mean, I would argue that Bernie Sanders is anti-gun like Donald Trump is pro-gun.
Uh-huh.
He's making these noises, so maybe he'll do what he says. Maybe he'll, if he becomes president, he'll actually push for some anti-gun legislation or sign some anti-gun legislation. But at the same time, maybe he'll be like the guy that speaks multiple times at the NRA annual meeting, which there isn't this year. And then goes through and starts bringing out gun bans and starts speaking out for banning suppressors and that sort of stuff. So I don't know. We are in crazy times where, I mean, you've got two very obviously tired old men that should really just be retired and enjoying their final years, but are instead up there on stage trying to look like they're putting on a good fight. And you got Biden doing this, like, literally his handler's trying to save him from himself. And he's telling him that the guy's a liar for saying that he's anti-gun when he is as anti-gun as the day is long. And that, oh man, he and his dead son and his junkie son are hunters, and he owns a 12-gauge and a 20-gauge. Okay, Sure, you're Mr. Pro-Gun.
You know, I'm actually starting to wonder about Biden's mental health.
Oh, I'm not starting to wonder. I'm right in the middle of wondering.
Well, okay, I suppose I should rephrase that. It does seem like in the past he may have been kind of weird and kooky, but really this campaign has made me start to wonder, does he have a degenerative brain disease?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would argue that, yes, so career-long Biden has been taking liberties with women, both young and old. That's on par. Two, Biden has been laden with gaffes / straight-on stupidity of saying really, really, really unflattering things and making very, very childish mistakes in campaign speeches and on the campaign trail. But yeah, now with the rambling speeches and the forgetting stuff, and now this like aggressive nature on the him just like being straight up violent on the like him, you know, sticking his hands in this guy's face. Like, if you have not seen the video, if you've only heard either the audio or read the transcript, I know a friend of ours talked about the fact that he read the transcript first and was just like, oh man, that's kind of juicy, I'm going to look that up, and then realized, oh man, the transcript doesn't do this justice. Like, he's getting in the face of this guy. Like, I honestly speaking, it looks like one of those situations where I was expecting John Correa to step in and talk about, all right, here's where the guy throws the punch.
I know. I mean, I was wondering what it would be like to be on the Secret Service detail and be thinking, holy crap, the guy I'm guarding is about to throw a punch. I was not trained for this. You know, what happens? What happens if my candidate commits assault? Oh, dang.
And again, he told the guy, let's take this outside. Like, he offered to fight an auto worker. Joe, I look like Madame Tussauds wax museum, kissing 80 Biden is going to fight a guy who wears a hard hat for a living and probably has hands that feel like leather gloves. Like, this is not a smart place to be. this is literally like the guy that, like, three beers in, you're like, you can beat up those bikers. or to quote one of my favorite comedians, Ron White, I don't know how many of them it was going to take to kick my ass, but I knew how many they were going to use.
All of them.
They're going to use four of them. It probably would have only taken two, but they're going to use all four. So yeah, I also have concerns about Biden's health and just, yeah, it is strange times. It is absolutely strange times. But on a lighter note, hilariously enough, while I was essentially composing this Fisk in my mind, the little thing of the, let's just do a sting where he just cusses at the guy and I say, well, what are you going to do? Someone says you're full of sugar, then yeah, there's no further response. Then congratulations, you won. And I was going to just, you know, just put an end sting on it and just pretend like that was the end of the Fisk. And all I could picture was the Gunblog Variety Cast end sting. And I just went, you know what? Let's do that. So I, for those that have been listening to this show and its previous iteration for a long time, I hope you were amused by that, because I sure was. And on a final note, I got to say, every time somebody says beer flu, especially since we're coming up on St. Patrick's Day, I think they're talking about the Irish flu. And that at least gives me some joy. And so I believe, since I'm practically a doctor, I will say that if you are legless drunk, you cannot catch the coronavirus. Trust me, I am a medical expert. Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibrespodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends, both online and off.
You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
And you can get more from me on various places across social media. Once again, a reminder that the March Madness raffle to benefit Operation Blazing Sword and Pink Pistols is still going. You have plenty of time to enter. And the really cool $10 classes don't have a lot of people entered into it. So if you want to buy a ticket for that, you have really good odds of winning. So go to blazingsword.org. I think it's like /March Madness or whatever. You'll scroll down. You'll find it.
It's in the show notes.
And you can see it's in the show notes. And you can see all the really cool things. And again, the tickets are $2, $3, $5, and $10. Really good stuff going to a good cause.
Thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
He's almost a doctor. And I've got a fever. And the only prescription is less coronavirus.
She hopes she won't get the beer flu, while I might have the Irish flu. Our illnesses are assorted, and so's our podcast.
Good night, everybody.